I left a message and he called me. Said Lyndon's son attacked me.
I may have a bug in my back. Have you said over anything in the last few hours? Yeah, we have got a big jerky. Somebody told me they imported a big jerky today. He did not today. Well, anyway, look, if you dispatch me through something right now, it doesn't matter, just something says hi or something. I just want to make sure the batch is working. Thank you.
Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for some time because we have with us Myrna Culbraith, who's going to be our guest this evening. We're going to be talking about what's happening to American education. But before we get into that, I just want to tell you a little bit about the program that was on Nightline. It was on the evening of the 5th. That was two nights ago with Ted Koppel. And if you can get a copy of the transcript of that, you can actually go to the web. It's transcripts.tv. That's the ABC site. And if you can pull it down, they will charge you for getting it, or you can actually call ABC and order that transcript of Ted Koppel's Nightline going into the plan. And basically, it was the plan that was laid out back in 1997 by the Project for a New American Century, the plan for America to dominate the world. And they had an interview with the chairman of the Project for a New American Century, William Crystal. Now, William Crystal, is, of course, he was a chief of staff for Vice President Dan Quayle. He is certainly into everything. He's very close to Rupert Murdoch. In fact, Rupert Murdoch gave him the money to set up his newspaper, the magazine, the Weekly Standard. But William Crystal is one of the major movers and shakers behind the scenes. My understanding is attended Bilderberger meetings. Certainly the Project for a New American Century, for all intents and purposes, is a front for the Council on Foreign Relations, which is a front for Cecil Rhodes' secret society. And of course, their program, and starting back in 1997, they planned the war against Iraq. And you can read their letters. They're up on their website, www.newamericancentury.org. And there you'll find in 1998, they're talking about how we've got to take out Iraq. And here you find Donald Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, Dick Cheney, Richard Pearl, John Bolton, Richard Armitage, the Deputy Secretary of State. All of these people are associated with this organization. There are about pretty close to 40 or 50 of them now, part of this organization that planned that America would dominate the world. That's really what it's all about. And the most incredible thing, on the program two nights ago, William Crystal, when asked by Ted Koppel, well, what's next? Well, Korea. North Korea is the next country. And then, of course, it's just apparently going to go on from there. Well, we're going to talking about taking out Saudi Arabia and Iran. Oh, he did say it's maybe the next 20 years or so, but we will simply remake the governments of the Middle East, and we will leave our troops stationed there. So we're in real trouble. We are beginning a series of wars, and the American people are not being told the truth. This is the closest thing I've seen to the truth. You can get that transcript from ABC. It'll be covered in my March newsletter, which I hope you'll want to get, and help us to get the word out. It's all planned ahead of time. It's all cut and dried. And, of course, when the president gets up and said, I haven't decided whether I'm going to go to war yet, well, he's decided they're going to go to war on the 17th. That's it. According to Joel Skousen, in his latest report, intelligence report, we'll start the heavy bombing on the 13th. We'll go to war on the 17th. And God save the people, our men, and God protect them and the people of the Middle East. A long-term planning for war with all the horror that it'll bring. Well, with that as the background, let's get to our special guest this evening, Myrna Culbraith. Hi, Myrna. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing okay, in spite of the fact that the world is a little bit of a turmoil, but meanwhile, I guess the thing that bothers me about all of this is I'm not particularly focused on the Middle East issue, although, of course, it's the background of everything right now. But there is such a cost to America, of the things that they've been doing just in the very simplest terms in reading and in brain power. I mean, one of the things that caught my attention in the last while is the new brain research, which is showing that many people's brains are working four times too hard, or even five or six or more times too hard, or twice as hard, if the average is about four times. When people are being labeled dyslexic, well, it's not really, as we've said, dyslexia. It's dysteachia. It's the wrong method. And now the brain research has essentially proved that, because there are studies, and particularly one study that's very interesting. They took people whose brains were working four times too hard as compared to a control group that was working better than average in reading, and then they just taught phonics to the group that was struggling. Waited a little while, remeasured things with brain scans. Now the brains that had been working four times too hard were working normally, in fact, better than normally, no difference from the better than average control group. So look at the meaning of that, if you then compare that in America to the fact that one out of two adult Americans reads on a fifth grade level or below. Now that's the bottom end of things. The top end is people who can read, but they struggle. They get where their brains work four times too hard. They get sleepy, tired, bored, bugged, antsy when they read. You know, I've been thinking, if the brain could talk to you, it would say, hey, listen, you know what? I'm working four times too hard up here, and it's not my fault. It's not even your fault. It's the fault of a wrong reading method that's been imposed on American schools for the last 70 years. Give me a break. Why don't you give me a little phonics? The brain research now shows just teaching me phonics will fix it. How about if you use phonics optimally and fix the brain in a few hours? Imagine the power that would release in this society. And, you know, if we're talking about the struggle for Western civilization, the survival of freedom and the values that many of us really espouse and that some people are probably about to die for, that's a huge part of that struggle. People who, you know, I've been following some of the arguments on all of this, and some of the arguments amount to, gee, I don't know, but I just don't want it to be that way. And that, you know, the level of thinking that's out there, a lot of people seems to be pretty limited, and you even hear them. There were some demonstrations and whatnot lately with high school and college students, and radio stations would go up to them and say, well, what's this all about? It was like they were all saying, it's like, you know, bombs are bad and bongs are good, let's have some marijuana. I mean, that was the level of discourse.
Well, of course, Myrna, they have deliberately dumbed down the American children. Really, one of the defining points in my life was a book I read 40 years ago. It was called Foundations, Their Power and Influence. And it was the story of the great tax-exempt foundations, Rockefeller, Ford, Carnegie. And, of course, the book was written in 1958. So it dealt with their influence, following the Korean War, their involvement in these great tax-exempt foundations in funding the communist and the socialist movement in America. But it also talked about how they funded a man named John Dewey and this whole progressive educational movement. The great tax-exempt foundations were funding John Dewey, who introduced this faulty form of reading and education into America. So-called progressive education was really aimed at dumbing down the American people. Why? Why did the great tax-exempt foundations want that? Foundations created by the great capitalists coming from the free, that wealth came from the free enterprise system, because there was an elite group, and many of these people had obtained their great wealth by selling out their very souls to the dark forces that dominate this world, that really wanted to use this country to bring about this one world government. And you couldn't have a bright, well-educated American people that would be willing to back into repeated wars, and certainly would not be willing to send their sons and daughters off to fight in foreign wars so America could create this empire, which, of course, was what they really wanted, the New World Order, the New World Religion. So you had to dumb them down, and they did this intentionally. And until people understand that what happened to our educational system ties right into what's happening today, certainly the people of Europe, where they do not have this deliberate dumbing down, are totally against the war. and yet over 50% of the people in America today support this war, and they don't even bother to stop and ask, what is this going to do as far as America is concerned? What's happened to our freedom here? What's going to happen to our economy? Why are we going halfway around the world to fight in the Middle East? Who's going to defend America? And, of course, nobody really asks what's going to happen. Maybe they will begin to ask when their sons and daughters are drafted to make up the army to replace all the people that will be lost in the Middle East. And then with the coming war with Korea and all the other wars that are planned by these people who dream a different dream, who respond to the sound of a different trumpet, who have a different vision of what the world should be.
One of the great ironies of the educational system in particular, and you mentioned Rockefeller and other names like that, I was recently watching a C-SPAN program, I think it was, and the last of the Rockefeller brothers, essentially, who now is late 80s or some such number,
That's
was
David.
On there, and he's just turned out a new biography, David, I think.
Yeah. Right.
And so he's got a new biography, and he's talking about various things. And, of course, he's controlled Citibank and a bunch of other things. And his brother Nelson was governor of New York and vice president and candidate and so forth. And anyway, what's known about the Rockefellers and what he mentioned in this chat with some interviewer was all of the brothers of that generation had, he said, dyslexia, and including him. He suffered from dyslexia, but, you know, did whatever he did. And it was all well known about Nelson Rockefeller that he didn't read well. What David went ahead to say, and I've known this for some time, but he went ahead to say they went to the Teachers College, Columbia University Laboratory School, in effect, John Dewey's Laboratory School. Dewey, of course, being funded by some of the Rockefeller money and so forth. And meanwhile, they're going, these brothers, who could have, you know, their parents could have sent them to the best private schools in the world or to any school or to tutors or to, you know, whatever they wanted to do, they could have done for those several brothers and a sister. And instead, they sent them to Dewey. And every one of them came out crippled, could not read well or didn't like to read or was labeled dyslexic. And what an irony that they put their own kids in the chopper of this, and whatever their reasons.
Well, of course, David was one of the most powerful men in the world. He was 20 years the president of chairman of the board of the Council on Foreign Relations, you point out, in charge of Chase Manhattan Bank and Citibank, and I think it was Chase Manhattan Bank. Certainly, he was the one who chose the people who became our presidents. He was the one who chose Jimmy Carter to become the president, and certainly Ronald Reagan to become the president. And he chose all of these people who were to be presidents through their organization. Now, the Bilderbergers, he organized the Trilateral Commission. They got Brzezinski to do that. Their emblem was three intertwining six. That was the logo, 666 of the Trilateral Commission. Their goal was world government. Maybe if he'd been able to read and he was able to understand history, why we might be living in a different world today. One time David was asked, if he thought of running for president, and his reply was, why should I step down? And, of course, he told a friend of mine at a meeting, Bill Dannemeyer, Congressman Dannemeyer, who told me they had a meeting with David Rockefeller one evening in Washington, D.C., about 15 conservative congressmen, Bob Dornan was there, and that David had commented off the cuff, some men are born to rule, most men are born to be ruled. And that is the great tragedy of our time. This is the man who ruled America and indeed much of the world, and he couldn't read. What a different world it might have been if it really understood history, if it really understood poetry, if it understood the great writings of the past, but he didn't. He was crippled, and his legacy is being carried out this month, and it will result in the deaths of so many people. As the Council on Foreign Relations Front Organization, a Project for a New American Century program for a series of wars will begin on the 17th of this month, I fear. Well, and it's going to be interesting to see how this thing plays out. I just pray that it'll be very short. But you're absolutely right. If people can't read, they don't understand the past. They cannot really grasp what's going on. And there really is damage to the mind and its comprehensive ability if they're not taught phonics, isn't there, Myrna?
There really is. I mean, there's damage that even shows up on the physical level of the brain. I mean, I used to be saying, well, people get the sleepy, tired syndrome, and we've seen it fixed by our method, even in bright adults, even, you know, and this doesn't have to be people that can't read. We're also talking 98% of graduating high school seniors cannot write a two-line theme without terrible mistakes in spelling. So at least 98% of everybody, you know, never mind the kids that already dropped out or killed each other, but even the ones that are graduating, 98% are crippled at least in their spelling by the time they graduate high school. So this is practically 100% problem. And many people don't know it. You know, they figure, well, whatever I'm doing about reading is what I'm doing. That's just how I'm built. And, you know, if I get sleepy or tired or bored or bugged or I just don't want to do it, or I buy books and put them on the shelf, or I read the first couple chapters or the first chapter or the first couple pages, and then I somehow get distracted and put it down and don't get back to it. All of those things, if any of that is ringing a bell with you out in the audience, give us a call and let us know that, because many people who are hurt on the brain-related level don't even know it and will never know it unless they do something like get hold of Phonixopoly and play through a few games. And you may find, to your great surprise, that all of a sudden it's like a cloud lifts, a weight lifts, the brain is not working two or three or four or six or however many times too hard. You don't even maybe know who you are until you do something like that. I mean, you may have overcome a lot of problems. This wrong reading method is so wrong that it hurts people on levels they don't even know. Who would know? I mean, until lately, and when you could actually look into the brain. For years I've been saying, you know, if they could look into the brain, they'd probably see that the brain is working overtime, that the brain is having to recognize a word on the picture side, where it's been taught to regard a word like a picture, and that's the right half of the brain, which turns out the right half doesn't even speak English. So you have to go over to the left side where you do talk, which the first thing they ever learned about left brain, right brain, was languages on the left side for almost everybody. And so now you have to recognize a word on the right, go to the left, figure out what it means, back to the right, back and forth, back and forth. I mean, it even sounds like it would make you nod off or go crazy.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that when you begin thinking phonetically, and I've only really done this in recent years since I've been talking to you, and you begin to sound out the words or names, or and then, of course, you begin wondering how that A or how that O or how that E or I, how the various vowels will be pronounced, because they have different sounds depending upon the adjacent vowels to them. These are things that I'd never even thought of before I started talking to you. And, of course, this is why people have difficulty spelling, is because they don't know the basic rules because they've never been taught them. And really, they're so really elementary in a phonics system. In the government schools, they have something known as creative spelling, and they don't bother to really insist on excellence or spelling things right. You can spell it any way you want to. After all, who are we to say what's right and what's wrong? There are no absolutes. And the tragedy is, in so many of our schools, children are not taught to spell. This is why on the spelling bees, the homeschool children do so much better than the government school children, because our homeschool children are taught phonics, and government school children are deliberately dumbed down, being taught the look-see method. And so until people begin to understand that what is happening in America is not accidental, it's part of a long-range planning going back over 100 years to John Dewey, and as Myrna will tell you, he set up a laboratory to test children with this new method of reading, this look-see method, found it didn't work, and said, that's just what we want. Why did they want it? Because they wanted to dumb down the American people. They tried it in Russia. The Russians said, we're not going to do that. We want our children to excel. We want them to do the right things. We want them to be able to be scientists. We want them to be able to accomplish great and wonderful things. They went back to phonics, and here in America, we embraced it. We're going to be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Myrna Culbraith. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Myrna Culbraith. And Myrna's been working with reading for, well, let's put it like this, many, many, many years. But of course, she originally came up with something known as the phonics game, where she laid out the rules and methods of teaching phonics. And then subsequently, that was sold. And so she created something called Phonixopoly or Phonopoly. And Phonopoly is simply a board game. Well, why don't you tell our listeners how Phonopoly is played so they can sort of envision this?
Well, it has, first of all, it has multiple levels. So you start at the first level, and there are seven different board games. It's not just one. So it's a big, extensive package. And then it has decks of cards that act like playing pieces on the board. There are 12 little decks of cards and so forth. So it's pretty big, interesting set, and you take out the first game and you set it up, and it looks pretty simple, and it is, but it's all of the sounds of all the letters of the alphabet, plus even all the main sounds of the vowels, like ah for A, the short vowel sound, and eh for E, and ih for I, and so forth. There's at least one short vowel sound in 9 out of every 10 words, by the way. So by the time you've played the very first game, even if you're playing with a little kid, little kid will be able to send out tens of thousands of words, all words of that type in the whole English language. And if you're an adult and you're playing it, chances are you never thought very carefully about those sounds either. You may be adding little extra sounds to them. There's an audio tape that shows you how to not do that. And so that you, and I had an interesting experience. I did a little demonstration with some families that came in to see about Phonixopoly, and they ranged from people coming in for the little preschoolers and five-year-olds and so forth, two people coming in for their teenage kids and themselves. And one lady walked off with it, and her eyes, I thought, would pop out of her head when I said that one of the bonus games is everything you always wanted to say but were afraid to pronounce. And she said, I need that. And it turned out she was a forensic, forensic medicine expert who testified in trials around the country. She was always afraid that they would ask her a question that she couldn't pronounce the answer, or she couldn't understand what they were saying, and she'd say, well, would you mind rephrasing that, please? And she managed to get along with all of this. And her son, who was looked to be 15, 18 years old, he could read words by memorizing, but if you covered up part of the word, he couldn't tell you the sound of any other part of the word. I mean, he could not tell you the sound of the E in equalizer, for example. Anyway, you play through this game. You start out, you put the little pieces on the A square. It's kind of like Go in Monopoly. And then you roll the die, and you can either go that number of spaces. Let's say you roll a 4, you can count out 1, 2, 3, 4, and land on that space and get the space, get to own it, just by giving the sound or the information that's on that space. In the later games, it's more than just the sound. Maybe it's a rule, perhaps. And you get to own that space. You get a little grant deed that's like a deed to the space. And your object is to get the most spaces and the most cards. So you roll the die. You can either go to that space and take it, or if you don't want to go to that particular space, maybe because somebody already owns it, you can draw a card. Actually, you can draw a card for any reason, including that you'd like to have the card, because the card is kind of like money and kind of like a house or a hotel that you can put on your property. So you play it, and it's a real strategy game, and people develop their own strategy. Some people always take a card. Some people decide they like to take the space, and, you know, it's interesting to see how people play it.
Well, I'm going to have to interrupt you there. Yeah. We're going to have to just take a real quick break here, and then we'll be back, and we'll be talking more about this game of Phonopoly, because it's really a fascinating game to play for anyone. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Myrna Culbraith. We're talking about the Phonopoly program she devised so that people could learn to read phonetically and spell phonetically and pronounce words phonetically. You know, it was very interesting. Myrna, I had a gentleman call me recently, and he'd got a Phonopoly set from us, and he was saying he had already gone through, he'd played all the games, and he was going to do it over again. because he had learned so much. Now, this is a man who must have been, you know, from the sound of his voice, he was somewhere between 55 and 65 years of age. And yet, so many people really have never learned the basic fundamentals of the English language, and they've always felt sort of cheated. And, you know, he was just so excited, you know, telling me about this. And, of course, it sort of made me feel, oh, maybe what we do is worthwhile, because if we can point people in the right direction and give them something that they can really change really their whole outlook to be able to read and read as he was supposed to read, rather than the victim of a system that was designed to fail. And, you know, I think it was certainly Thomas Sowell, who's up at the Hoover Institute, and I know you've interviewed him, and he said, you know, if the American people understood what was happening, if a foreign country had done this to our children, why would it be an act of war? Well, it really is an act of war, and it is because we have people in this country with no loyalty to America. They have a different vision. They hate this country. They hate individual freedom. And they set out many years ago to dumb down our people so that America could be used for their nefarious purposes. And really, of course, if you get into the spiritual background of this, it was to bring about this one world order. And you go behind that, as I do, and read the publications of the Luciferians, and they will tell you that this one world order is to usher in their ruler. And you read things like Share magazine, put out by the Terra Center, ties into Benjamin Krem, and we'll be quoting that in my March newsletter, writings of Mandy P. Hall, and they equate the coming world order with the coming new world ruler who they worship. So people don't understand that there really is this other dimension out there. I mean, people say, gee, they must have made a mistake. No, the people who brought in this new form of reading didn't make a mistake. The people who are taking it to the wars are not making mistakes. They know what they're doing, but of course they can't let the American people know that. If the American people knew what they were doing to the minds of our children, they would take their children out of school, you know, as quickly as they can. They would insist that their churches have schools, or if they don't, they'd leave the church and find one that really did care about children, much more so than being afraid of offending somebody for taking a stand for righteousness.
Many people do try to get their kids into either homeschooling or private education, and you know, it's very smart of them to do that. And if you can't or don't think you can go all the way to homeschooling or to things like that, at least protect the children with excellent reading. If they can really read to some degree anyway, they can fend for themselves. It's still, there are many things in public schools that would frost your eyeballs if you really knew what was going on there, such as we mentioned death education, where they have them write their own suicide notes, for example, and they wonder why somebody might do a Columbine. And, you know, it is pretty scary out there, but at least fortify somebody with the ability to read. And, you know, there are many kids who are out there going to public schools, and they're doing their best to survive. I had a girl come into a little seminar that I gave, and here was the nicest girl you could imagine. She was an eighth grader. When I asked questions of people who came in for the seminar, what brought you out, because I'd just been on a television program in the area that morning, and, you know, a brief announcement. And so I said, what brought you out? What interested you? Well, the girl spoke up for herself, and her dad was with her. But she didn't wait for him to say why she was there or what was what. She said, I'm an eighth grader, and I'm an honor student. I'm in the advanced placement programs. And I find it ironic, and I thought you would like to know, that while I read books, you know, of 200-300 pages, sometimes two or three of them a week, the requirement for being an honor student is only to read 70 pages a week. She said, I think that's awful, and what do you think? I said, I thought that was pretty awful as well. But then she went ahead and she said, but, you know, one of the reasons I'm here is I can't spell worth a nickel. I score in the high 90s on every other thing, in, you know, above 94 or 5 out of 100 kids in most things, and in spelling I'm down in the 60s. And I don't know why, but maybe you can tell me. And I took her on the free test, and she could not sound out words. If she happened to recognize a word, okay. If she didn't, she scrambled it. And here's the best result of our educational system.
Now, Robert, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Bernard Culbraith. We'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 888-264-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon or this evening is Myrna Culbraith, the designer of a Phonixopoly or Phonopoly, a board game, but of course it's a fun game because, but it's more than that. It actually teaches you how to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically, and this is really so vitally important. Because if a child can't read properly, they can't spell properly, they can't, of course, pronounce words properly, and, of course, it will influence their whole ability to function. But even more than that, their brain's not working right. And if your brain's not working right, you're just going to not be able to really understand what's going on in the world. And we've got so many Americans today. You try to tell them what's going on in the world. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to believe it. They really don't want to even have to stop and think of the seriousness of what is transpiring in the world. They just want to be off in their own little cocoon, thinking somehow that they can withdraw from the tragedy of the unfolding events. I'll never forget during the Vietnam War when I was practicing medicine, I had a father bring his son in, and of course the draft was on, his son was going to be drafted, and he wanted me to falsify, say there was something wrong with his son, he had a bad knee or something, so he wouldn't be, have to be drafted. And, you know, I said, I can't do that. Well, I don't want my son to go. You mean, won't you help me? And I'll have to admit, I got very, very irritated with him, and I said, you know, you're concerned about your son going, but you're not concerned about other people's sons going and maybe being crippled or dying. I mean, what have you done at all as far as being involved in what's transpiring in our society? Are you involved in any way in trying to educate people or becoming educated yourself? Well, he wasn't interested in anything but his son. And I remember that so well. And I felt badly for his son, but I said, I'm sorry, but I will not, of course, compromise what I believe to help you. I'd like to help you, but I'm not going to say something is so if it's not. Hey, I'm sure he went off and got some other doctor to sign the waiver, just like they got waivers for George Bush, so he didn't have to go. He got in the Air National Guard over the names of some 500 people, 100 people who'd applied, but of course his father had strong connections in Texas, so he didn't have to go. He was in the Air National Guard, but of course he never showed up for any of the training. This is tragically the way that the game is played. We always send somebody else's son to do the fighting and the dying. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you're out there and you have a question to ask, because this issue of being dumbing down our children really is so important. We talk to teachers all the time who are trapped in the educational system, who know what's going on, but of course they really either keep their mouth shut and keep their jobs, or they speak out, and then of course their careers are ended. In fact, on the break on our local radio station, they were talking about some teacher, and apparently the children were very uptight with what things are going on in the world, and she told them in a public school to put their faith in Jesus, turn their fears over to Jesus Christ. And of course now she will be punished for that, probably lose her job. Why? Because she expressed in a public school what at one time could be expressed anywhere in America, and certainly in our schools, where our children were encouraged to have deep and abiding religious beliefs. But that is no longer the case. After all, we've outlawed God from our schools. Somebody I remember asking after September 11th, where was God? I mean, why didn't God stop this? And the response was, well, we've outlawed God from America, really. And we have. If you think that, of course, you can do, take God out of our schools and prayer out of our schools, and God is still going to protect America. Why, of course, you have a pretty low opinion of God. He's not a genie. He doesn't come when we rub the bottle. He is there, and when we repudiate him, eventually he repudiates us and our nation. So, Myrna, of course, as we see what's going on, certainly you're dealing with young people all the time, who've really been systematically dumbed down. And yet you've had amazing results, I know, taking some of these children in the lower socioeconomic stratus of society, you know, down in the lower 25% of the children in school, and teaching them to read, and really, in many cases, actually transforming their lives, haven't
well, they
you?
They just bloom like flowers, Dr. Stan. It's amazing. That was a study that was done under a U.S. Department of Education grant, an independent third-party study, not even our grant, but someone else's, who we allowed them to use Phonixopoly and test it. And they took worst-case kids. These were mostly minority kids. They were all poor kids, and they were all in the bottom quarter of their class, and they scored in the bottom quarter on a standardized test of reading. Can you read this word off the page? Nope, they couldn't. And you know, some were a little better than others. Some were on a pre-primer level. They were third to sixth grade kids. Some were on, you know, third grade when they were in the sixth grade kind of level. And we took them, Phonixopoly took them, and not even our teachers, some public school teachers that we gave a brief introduction to, here's how you play the games, and sent them off to do it, and they gave a brief introduction, here's how you play the games, to some high school age aides, and then they all sat down and played it with the grade school kids. And they did it 30, 40 minutes at a time, three or four times a week for less than a month. Somebody toted it up, something less than 16 hours. These kids went from the bottom 25% to the top 14% in the country. We literally moved them from the barrio to Beverly Hills, or the ghetto to Beverly Hills, or however you want to think about it. Wherever they were, poor, disadvantaged, all the reasons why they shouldn't be able to read, and sure enough, they couldn't read. And then, less than a month later, they could. They could read words off the page, they could read a book. And not only did it show up on the test, and by the way, the independent PhD evaluator who tested these kids at the end was absolutely stunned. I mean, he said to me, if I hadn't done the testing myself, I would think that somebody fudged the test, because it was that dramatic. Couldn't believe it. And he said these kids would never quit. These kids would just keep on going down to the last line of the test. They never missed enough that the test standard called for them to stop, and they never quit. And they went right down to words that most bright adults wouldn't even know the meaning of, but they would sound them out and pronounce them. And, you know, some of them they may not have known the meaning of either, but on any halfway reasonable topic, they could read a newspaper, they could read anything you put in front of them, and they just were beside themselves with joy. I went out there about halfway through this when they were on about the third game of Phonopoly. There's like five basic games, two bonus games. By the third game, you're sounding out five or six syllable words. But now you can explain every single thing that's going on there, how this vowel changes the other vowel sound, how this letter changes the other sound, how come you need a double letter in here to protect this sound. And all of a sudden you know everything about it, more than most professors of linguistics would know. And yet you never broke a sweat. It all was just step by step, and it reprogrammed the brain so the brain looked at it one sound at a time, which is, you know, the new brain scan stuff is showing when the brain reads successfully, it's reading one sound at a time. It's doing it very quickly, but it's noticing each and every sound that's in there, and it would notice if there were a change in a sound that was in there or in a letter that was in there, and does notice when they test this on brain scans. So if a brain is not reading successfully, if it's jumping and guessing and misreading and having to back up and go around and think, what is it? Did I get that? Oh, maybe I better look back and see about this. If it's doing that, it's not reading successfully. It doesn't get the comprehension. It feels bad. And it's working probably four times too hard. Well, these kids went from every kind of chaos in their reading. And by even the third game when I was out there, and I hadn't been there before that, and I walked in, and the public school teachers that I'd trained briefly, two of them were old war horse teachers who thought they knew phonics. And when they saw what we were teaching, they realized they didn't know a fraction of what they needed to know about phonics, but they were pretty good about it. They said, wow, you know, if I don't know that, that's pretty interesting. I better teach that. And so, and two were new right out of teacher's college, and they didn't know it either. And they were pretty good about it and said, wow, you know, better teach that. And they did. And then they were all kind of standing around by the time I got there after the third game, looking stunned because these kids were doing it. And they knew they were doing it in the games, at least, but they hadn't actually asked them to read on something. So one of the old War Horse teachers was saying, "Well, I can't believe it. I wonder if these kids could actually read something." Well, I happened to have a newspaper with me. I pulled out a paragraph from the newspaper. I picked out some little kid named Jose. I said, "Jose, come here. I want you to read this for me." Well, he picked it up and he read the paragraph. And I thought these teachers by now were gathered around. I thought they were going to fall on the ground. And they were stunned. And they said, "Boy, it's really working. I hoped it was really working, but I didn't know, but it's really working." And meanwhile, while I was there, a lady came in, and I didn't know who she was, and it turned out she didn't know who I was. She came in to say something to one of the teachers. It turned out she was the director of the after-school program at this school, and she was also the librarian there. And so she started to talk to the teachers, and then somewhere she was saying, "You know, at first I didn't want to let Phonicsopoly into the after-school program. I thought it'll take kids away from math homework club and drama club and so on, and I just didn't want to do it. And then finally they talked me into it, and now I've got 250 kids on a waiting list trying desperately to get into Phonicsopoly. And it's because the kids are all running around saying not only how much fun it is, but how much is helping them." Well, then somebody introduced me, and she said, "Oh, my." You know, it was kind of like the Zaki Farms lady with the chickens. I never did tell her my name, but and actually I did tell this one my name, and she said, "Oh my goodness," and you know, she thanked me to the skies for inventing it and so on. And then she said, "I'd really like to write your testimonial." So I said, "Well, that'd be terrific," and I gave an address, and you know, we went on with the project finished. We got these great results, and then I didn't hear from her for a while, and you know, got busy and whatnot. So it was a few months later I finally got around to calling and getting through to this lady who was a librarian and the after-school director there. And she said, "Oh, I really did write you that testimonial, and it came back. Must have been something wrong with the address. And here it is sitting on my desk." But she said, "Now I need to add to it. I need to write you a new one and add to it. Since we did that, our library circulation has increased 10 times. And, you know, I was a little stunned even because we only had about 10% of the kids in that school. I must have increased about 100 times the ones we put through Phonicsopoly. But, you know, it not only did it work immediately, but obviously it worked to make them want to read and to take books out of the library and to go on and goodness knows,
well, you know,
Myrna, in their lives.
Myrna, they've had to work very hard to dumb down our people. I mean, because the children ordinarily can learn to read phonetically very easily. They can learn in kindergarten how to read phonetically, and yet they've intentionally held our children back. They've intentionally dumbed down our children. And where is the outcry from the parents? Well, most of them don't even understand what's going on. When you hear the educators say, "Oh, every child should be able to read by the end of the third grade," what they're really saying is, "We're going to hold your children back until the third grade, and by then a lot of them are never going to be able to read and read properly, and we're going to have them dumbed down reading Jane Run, or you know, whatever it would be." And they know what they're doing. They just hope that the parents never find out what they're really up to. And, you know, if you are a teacher and you try to teach, reading and especially phonics, and you try to teach it early, you're going to get into real trouble. Because the people who control the reins of government education have an entirely different agenda, and the average person has no grasp of that at all. And that's really what's so tragic, is that nobody's telling them. And this is, of course, why I do what I do 5 hours a day, and why we have you on from time to time, to try to let the American parents realize that there's been an organized, orchestrated effort to dumb down the American people.
Well, it's very heroic of you, Dr. Stan, to go give those 5 hours a day to trying to inform and communicate what you've read and what you think and what's going on. I mean, you're a medical doctor and you're retired now, and you could go play golf, I suppose, if that interested you. But I know what does interest you is trying to make a difference in the world. But even so, it's tremendous effort, it's tremendous cost of time and energy. And I'm sure your whole audience thanks you for that from time to time, and so do I. And it is, you know, it's so painful for people out there, and that's, I guess that's why I keep getting drawn into this and spending more and more time on it, even at the expense of writing. I'd like to do and other things that we have on our agendas. But the other day I went and gave a little demonstration for some people who are involved with some of them are homeschooling, some of them are thinking about homeschooling and whatever they're doing, and a bunch of families turned out for a demonstration of Phonicsoftly through a little organization that they have, and one of the families happened to be an African-American family, and lady was there with several kids that looked like they ranged from about 5 to teenage, and the mother, who was nice-looking and obviously very concerned about her kids, and she said, you know, we've worked with the kids, and we've had them go to private schools, or we've had various things going on, so we're in here pitching, but here's my daughter, and she's in kindergarten, and she seems to be kind of getting it with the reading. She can do pretty well. But here's my son. He's in first grade, and he can't get a word off the page. And I just don't know why, but maybe you could tell me. So I went over, and I took the little boy, and she said he knows his individual sounds, some anyway, but he can't put them together to hear the word. Well, this turns out to be fairly common with young kids, especially when they're being taught phonics a little bit wrong. And, for example, they might be being taught that the sound of T is tuh. Well, it's really not. It's just t, and that shouldn't be on there. And even th has a little bit of your voice in it, but it doesn't have buh hung out there on the end of it. And then most people don't know the short vowel sounds like ah very well either. And so I asked this little boy the sounds like that, according to the T, and he said tuh. And to the B, and he said buh, and so forth. And anyway, so I just told him, you know, get rid of those little sounds on here now. And I turned over the first word on a card in the first game of Phonicsoftly, which was bat. And I said, all right, now, sound it out. Just keep those little uhs off and use the ah sound. Well, he sounded out the at. And then he said bat, and the mother just about fell on the floor. It's the first word he got off the page. And he did it in about 2 minutes just by my helping him clean up the sounds that he sort of knew, but they were being taught a little bit wrong. And most adults would do the very same thing, make the same mistakes on the same sounds. So our first tape tells you how to clean that up. And if you've never done that, it'll make a big revelation. Even there, and by the end of that very first game, there are only 40 sounds in the whole English language. There are about a million words, but only 40 sounds and maybe a dozen rules. And once you know those, you can sound out any word, get it off the page. You can typically spell it without memorizing. Handful of words you might have to add a little bit of memory to. That's it. Once you know the basic structure, even those fall into place because you notice, oh, right, that one doesn't quite sound like I would expect it to sound. Oh, it needs this extra silent letter. Okay, got it. And everything falls into place as you've been saying. It makes a lot more sense. Even if you come to this as a bright adult who reads and reads extensively, you know, some people may think they're above the level of this. Bet you a nickel. I will personally bet everybody that's listening to us a nickel or some number anyway that they can't get through the third game of Phonicsoftly without learning numerous things that they never even heard of.
Well, let's go to Eric, who's calling from Compton.
Sure.
Hi, Eric. How are you?
Fine, Doc. How you doing?
Fine, thanks. I had another Eric today calling in the afternoon, and I thought it was you. And no, it was. I knew he was from Southern California. He turned out to be from Huntington Beach. So anyway, this
that's
is
not
Eric
that far from here.
Big Pine?
That's not that far from here.
All right, fine. Well, this is Eric from Compton. How are you doing?
Doctor, can you help me?
Well, I don't know.
you know, I really just wanted to listen tonight. I didn't want to call, but boy, she just nailed me when it came to that. And it, you know what? It's a little. It's almost embarrassing to admit. I know, 51 years, almost 51. But I mean, she just nailed it. I pick up a book. I want to read very, very badly, but I'll read a couple of chapters. And I mean, everything she said. And I've actually been putting this off for some time. But when I finish with you guys, I'm going to order that book. Oh. I mean, to order the game.
All right, fine.
I'm going to take you at your word that it's going to help me. Now, can it help me at 50 years old?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I sometimes tell the story of, same story that you've told. I've heard from, I cannot tell you how many people. And starting with the one that really woke me up was a guy who had gone back to law school in his 50s. And he was a dentist. And, you know, somewhere he got the dental degree, somewhere he went back to law school. He passed the law school, passed the bar. But he came into us when we were doing face-to-face seminars using the same game kind of method. And he said, you know, my spelling's pretty lousy, but what's really getting me is this sleepy, tired stuff. I had to get the law degree reading 5 minutes at a time. And, you know, and if I tried to read it now, I just conk completely out. I can hardly pick up a book or force myself to pick up a book. And this sleepy, tired stuff is killing me. Could you help me with that? Well, I didn't know then. So I said, don't know, but certainly help you with the spelling, the comprehension. You might as well take the weekend seminar. So he did. And you see if this works for you, too. He played just two of the games. And be sure you sound it out one sound at a time those first couple games. That seems to be what triggers the brain to reprogram. He went home that night and read all night long. He picked up a book thinking it'd put him to sleep. No such luck. He couldn't put the book down for the first time in his life.
Well, you know, I also have three adopted children that are like 3, 5, and 6. So it'll benefit them also, I believe.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, you can head them right into it. Sure. Perfect.
But early in the program, I mentioned I had a man in the last couple of weeks, and he was between 55 and 65, just hearing him, you know, and he had bought it just for himself and played it through one time, all of the games, and now he said, I'm going to go through it again, and, you know, thank you so much, I've learned so much from this. And I will tell you, and I am 74, but I've always been a terrible speller. I had a Phi Beta Kappa Key and graduated with honors. But, you know, I never could spell. And I have learned so much since, you know, I started doing the programs with Myrna and played the game and then began to think phonetically. And it really has helped me. And if I'm a lot older than you are, Eric, I really believe this will help anybody. You can be a child, you can be a young adult, you can be an old adult, you can be old like I am, and you'll benefit from it. And I wouldn't, believe me, we have a lot of people come to us for advertising, and if I don't think the product's worthwhile, we do not handle it, we don't even talk about it. If I think it's something worthwhile, then, as with Myrna, we have Myrna on usually about once a month on this program, just because by repetition, some people are going to say, hey, maybe we ought to give it a try. Why don't you get it and then give us a call back in a month or so and let us know what happens.
Doctor, I've been with you now for about 10 years. I've come to trust you. I'm going to take you at your word at that and order the game.
God bless you. Thanks so very much.
You bet.
Thank you. Thank you, Myrna.
I'll listen to hear you back, Eric.
Okay.
And
I'll call you back.
Story.
Let you know.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Eric from Compton, and it was so embarrassing today. I said, Eric from Southern California. That's Eric from Compton. The guy said, no, I'm from Huntington Beach. I can usually remember when people have called before, but there are not too many Erics from Southern California who call, but now I have two of them. Well, anyway, if you're...
Well, we'll get them both on Phonixopoly, and they can have a little meeting.
Anyway, if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to know more about Phonixopoly, you can call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and learn a little bit more about this. I think it's a fascinating, fascinating game. And, of course, I believe that they are deliberately dumbing down our children, and they're dumbing down our adults. And if you can't read, if you can't think, you can't think clearly, if your mind isn't functioning right, well, you're not going to make correct decisions. And boy, as I see what's going on today, I realize at least half of our country is really confused and mixed up on what's going on. Well, Myrna, we're just about out of time. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners tonight?
I would say, you know, you need to take responsibility for your own brain, the brains in your family, the brains around you. I mean, go volunteer with it somewhere. But try it yourself, because you may not even know who you are, you know. People's lives turn around in a heartbeat sometimes. They go off and do a new career. They go back to work. They get a different job. They decide to go on the radio as a talk show host. They do whatever they do. And maybe it only takes one little right turn. What if your brain was really working 2 or 3 or 4 times too hard? What if you are putting down that book that you really wanted to read, but you don't ever really quite get back to it? And what if that could change? What if it could change in a matter of 2 or 3 or 4 hours playing the first couple or three of these games, and you don't ever get to it because you don't pick up the phone and call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and you'll never know?
Well, you've got that number down fairly well. Of course, the reason Myrna knows the telephone number is sometimes when I'm away traveling, and why she does our early morning program and our Genesis program, and of course that gives me the opportunity to get away knowing the programs are in good hands. And when you do talk radio and you're on other people's networks, now this is our own network, but on other people's networks, why, if you don't do a good job or have a good host, then they get very unhappy with you. But they've always been very happy with the job Myrna's done, and so have I. Myrna, thank you so very much for being with us.
Oh, it's a delight to be on with you as always, Stan, and thank you for all your efforts.
Good night. God bless. Bye-bye.
God bless.
Okay, fine. That was Myrna Culbraith, and we're talking about phonicsopoly, and if you're interested in learning more, why, you can always call 1-800-544-8927, and of course, if you'd like to know more about my ministry, Radio Liberty, why, you can call that same number. Certainly, if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day, and we're primarily supported by the people who believe in what we're doing and believe that there really is a problem in America and indeed in the world today. And of course, as you've heard me say many times before, we're involved in a spiritual battle being played out at a political and ideological and cultural and economic and educational battlefield. And unfortunately, very soon, we'll be played out in the battlefields of Iraq, and then after that, the battlefields of North Korea, and then back to the Middle East, because if you check on what was said two nights ago on Nightline with Ted Koppel, when he asked the chairman of the project for the New American Century of what was going to happen, he said, we are going to change the governments of the Middle East. And Syria, specifically Saudi Arabia and Iran. I wonder how that makes the leaders of those countries feel, and I wonder how the American people would feel if they knew somebody else were coming and planning on changing our government. Well, we're in real trouble today. We're in real trouble today because behind all of this, these activities, and behind all of these organizations, whether the people understand it or not, are the spiritual forces that energized Cecil Rhodes, who created a secret society, which created a front group known as the Round Table, and the Round Table then was the front for the Council on Foreign Relations, which, of course, is almost always provides our Secretary of State and the people who surround our president. And, of course, you can check that out in Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World at Our Time, on pages 951 and 952, when he tells that the Council on Foreign Relations was a front for the J.P. Morgan and the small American Roundtable Group, and you read about the Roundtable, that was the front for a secret society that was founded on occult beliefs, and what was its purpose? To create a world government. And so you can take that and then begin moving it into the spiritual realm. And if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, why, you really need to begin to get a grasp of the true nature of what's going on today. And so we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers. We ask you to pray for the president. We ask you to pray for revival in America, because if the American people do not turn back to God, then God is going to turn his back on America. And as Thomas Jefferson said so well, God, who gave us life, gave us liberty, but can the liberties of a nation be secure when the conviction has been forgotten that liberty is the gift of God? I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and his justice will not sleep forever. And so we ask you, of course, to remember to pray for our boys who will soon be going into battle, and for the civilians there, the Arabs, the Palestinians, the Israelis. And then, of course, please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection, because we're out on the front lines, and what we're saying may not be popular, but it's true. And each of us has an obligation to speak out in truth at this time in history. And so until tomorrow at the same time, or I guess Monday now, when we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
back and just say, I just listen on the radio. Yeah. Put it on the back of this piece of paper. Put it through there. Wait a minute, see if I have another number.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily that of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we always welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But well, please hold your calls. Well, maybe don't hold your calls, because we'd hope to have with us this evening Pat Matriciana. But if we don't have Pat, why, of course, we'll have to rely upon you to help us as we try to keep a conversation going over this next hour. Pat, of course, those of you who don't remember, Pat is really one of my favorite people. He was a television producer who had a nice little company. It was called Jeremiah Films, and they traveled all over the world, he and his wife, and they put together films dealing with what was happening from a spiritual point of view, the New Age, the Rajneesh Center up in Oregon there, the cult center, and certainly the impact of this whole movement, this spiritual movement, on Christianity and on our society. And then, of course, one time he stopped by our home, and I gave him a copy of a book called Philip Drew Administrator. It was written by Colonel House. It was back in 1911. It was published, I think, in 1912. But it basically told how you would establish a dictatorship in America. It was written anonymously, but everybody at that time knew it was written by Colonel House, because he always liked to leave little clues there. And in that book, he said he had the hero, who was a lieutenant colonel, who led a military revolt against the government and took over the government from a military point of view. His name, was Philip Drew. But at one point, Philip Drew said to one of his people, well, I'll meet you at Mandel House. Well, Colonel House was Edward Mandel House. So that was the clue, the secret clue to who had really written it. But in that book, he told how you control the president. And you got your man into the presidency, and at first somebody was sympathetic with your goals. And then he did something you didn't like. You had all of the newspapers attack him and just vilify him and ridicule him, sort of like they did with Trent Lott recently, only, of course, you can't get rid of the president that easily. And so, of course, the president then would eventually come around to your point of view. He told how you would take over the Supreme Court and use the Supreme Court to change the rules of the nation. Now, this is written in 1912. And he explained about the fireside chats, how the president would have fireside chats with the people. And, of course, that was popularized 20 years later by Franklin Delano Roosevelt. In fact, Colonel House is actually the mentor of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He controlled both Woodrow Wilson and Roosevelt during the first half of the 20th century. And Colonel House just laid out the plan by which he would establish an authoritarian dictatorship in America by the democratic process. And believe me, everybody in politics who's ever studied what's going on realizes it was the Mein Kampf for what's going on today. Well, right now we have with us, from Southern California, Pat Matriciana. Hi, Pat. How are you doing?
wonderful to be on again with you. I'm sorry our phones were screwed up this evening.
Oh, well, that's all right. At least we got hold of you. That's pretty good. Sometimes we don't get through at all, and I've got to do a monologue for an hour, and nobody will call in. But thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, I apologize. To all of you folks, I apologize, and most of all to you, my dear brother.
Well, anyway, Pat is down in Southern California, and he's now, of course, helping to produce movies and hopefully television, and he's into all sorts of fascinating things. And what's life like in Hollywood? Is it still a lot of, certainly a lot of sin and occultism and certainly anti-Christian bias there? Or are we having some impact? I'm told by Ted Baer and some of the others who work there that really there are a considerable number of people there who are really aware of what's going on and very concerned about it.
I would say that Hollywood is still Hollywood, and it's still asserting its evil influence. However, there are men and women of God in every area of the industry who are here who want to make a difference. In fact, there are a number of prayer meetings that take place among media professionals. It's really exciting because God is doing things in Hollywood, and God does answer prayer. And I think one of the most powerful things that's happening is that when Christians who are very zealous for Him and who are dedicated to Him and who really care about the Lord get down on their knees and pray, things do change. And we're seeing media executives, their lives change. We're seeing, I have a friend who was very, very involved in putting out these very, very gross, R-rated movies, but they were gross R-rated movies, you know.
I mean, they were really bad at R-rated movies.
Well, you know, he was involved in things like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and stuff like that. And he is now in the process of helping to produce a film that will really lift up the Lord, and it's based on a true historical figure that many of us celebrate his birthday on the 14th of February. And it's a great... So God is working. He just is working, and He's working slowly. He's working powerfully, and so I want to give you a good report. There's actors, there's producers, directors, writers. There's many, many top professionals who have been at the very top of their game, who are today dedicated believers, and who are committed to making a difference.
Some of these are actually new believers then.
Some of them are new believers, and some of them are old believers who've come out of the closet for the Lord, and they're not ashamed of Him. And that's the most exciting thing.
Well, it really is. Of course, there's this new movie out that has produced Gods and Generals, and, you know, of course, my understanding is it's really a very, very powerful film, and we see a few advertisements on it. We've seen a few books around on that. How is the movie doing? First of all, is it a good movie? Is it as powerful as some people claim? And then how is it doing in the box office? Because it's very expensive to produce.
It's a very expensive movie. It's a long movie. It's 4 hours long, and it deals with the Civil War. And it really takes it goes into the lives of a lot of the generals and what the impact that God had in their lives. And you know, it is a significant film. I haven't seen it yet. And I plan to soon. The fellow that wrote it and directed it is a fellow by the name of Ron Maxwell, who's a man who's a strong conservative. You've met Ron. You've met him at one of our meetings.
That we went to,
and he's really great at what he does. So I'm proud to be his friend, and I'm going to support the film, and I think you do. Gods and Generals, folks. Go out and see it, done by a great man.
And I really think it has a tremendous the background on it's got a tremendous cast, and you know 4 hour movie. You wonder how anybody can sit there, and yet of course sometimes a movie like that can have a tremendous impact because it's really about the impact of God on these people's lives.
Well, there's an intermission, folks. There's a half an hour intermission between the two showings of Gods and Generals, and and I would suggest you go see it. It's a great movie.
Okay.
So anyway, that's, you know, I would say that in Hollywood, good things are happening. And as a matter of fact, remember the Clinton Wars that we were involved in?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Exposing Bill Clinton in the videos that you sold in the Clinton Chronicles.
Well, that means the one that you produced, the Clinton Chronicles, that really had such a profound impact.
Well, but, you know, you were as much my partner as anybody in that. I would say that my fame in Hollywood, more than anything, has come from producing those movies, not from the fact I've been involved in the production of several feature films, but it's come from that, because there are a lot of conservatives in Hollywood, and when they hear that I went after Clinton, they all of a sudden they get real excited. As a matter of fact, when I met Mel Gibson, and I spent 3 hours with Mel, and you know, several of us did, Tim LaHaye and myself and others. What a great guy he is.
I'm so impressed by him, by these movies that he's produced.
Oh, but he's a very strong conservative, and I would say, Dr. Stan, that the way Mel looks at the world and the way you look at the world are very similar.
Well, in fact, I read an interview in George magazine where he was talking about how, you know, most of our problems were related to Cecil Rhodes and the Rhodes scholarships and these people that had been trained at Oxford that were out to take over the world. And he's absolutely right. Only in George magazine, and of course, George magazine, I think, is no longer, but it was certainly great to see that. And to realize that he was well aware of these secret societies. In fact, that movie put out a conspiracy theory. He did a magnificent job appearing to be somebody who was just as crazy as a loon. And, of course, in the end, you realize, of course, he was talking about the MKUltra program, which was a very real program where they actually intentionally set out to create dissociative personalities and drive people crazy. In fact, we have a new book written by a psychiatrist based upon 15,000 pages of CIA records, much of it redacted, called Bluebird, Going into Operation Bluebird, a planned program to use American psychiatrists to create emotional disease in helpless victims. So, I mean, I thought that was a great movie that he put out.
Oh, absolutely. And he's got some good staff, too, who work with him and who look at life pretty much the same way he does. But, you know, there are others in Hollywood out there that are very strong conservatives. I've met a number of the actors, and some of them are so good that they don't get blackballed. But they are a minority, Dr. Stan. They are a minority. And I think that, you know, we need more people to get involved in the industry, people of talent, not just people who, if we're going to compete in a world-class industry, which is the motion picture industry, we've got to do it with world-class people. We can't do it with novices. And that's why I believe God is raising up great people to do this. I'm involved with some of the finest producers that have ever lived on the planet, who've done some of the greatest movies that have ever been done. And it's really a thrill working with these men and women. And it's just, you know, so I'm very blessed and honored to be able to work in Hollywood. And at the same time, Dr. Stan, we haven't forgotten what we're doing, and we haven't forgotten our roots. And our roots go back to documentary films. We have a new series coming out. We're working with a very good friend by the name of Ken Klein. And basically it deals with a subject that I think is vital for all of us right now. It deals with how to deal with terrorism. What's going to happen when the terrorists start attacking? What happens if, for example, a dirty bomb is dropped in a major city or even in a smaller city? You know, what do you do? What happens if your water supplies are poisoned? What happens if all of a sudden we find our utilities destroyed? What happens if they block a whole bunch of outlets to cities by, you know, destroying, you know, setting cars on fire at key locations? I mean, there are all kinds of scenarios that are coming up. That FEMA, which I looked at as the evil enemy not long ago, some of the FEMA people that I've met are very good, conscientious patriots. And they're concerned about these things.
No, I think that justifiably they should be. And, of course, Ken is a good man, as you well know, former professional football player. And for our listeners out there, we carry a three-television set, the three-video set that he did on the Holy Land. And since I can't get back there, we enjoy looking at it and seeing those beautiful, those wonderful places we've visited so many times in the past. He did a great job on that set. Well, I think this is important. I think that the great tragedy is today is that a lot of people are frightened to death because if something were to happen, they wouldn't know what to do. I mean, after all, most people have never thought about where water comes from. Everybody knows it comes from a faucet. Where does food come from? Why, it comes from the grocery store. But what happens if there's no water in the faucet? What happens if there's no food in the grocery stores? And these are the things that people have to start doing now because everything has changed. The world changed on September 11th. It will never be the same again. We're entering into a series of wars which I am firmly convinced will, at least in part, designed to bring terrorist attacks on America and, of course, to drive many of the people we brought into this country with a different culture to the point of desperation where they will do exactly what they're doing over in Israel today. And the terrorist bombings there where people are willing to blow themselves up simply to kill somebody else. And you say that doesn't make sense. Well, it doesn't make sense to you and I. It makes all the sense of the world to them because they've embraced a fanatic form of Islam totally different than the Muslim faith where they have the five tenets of Islam and then the sixth tenet, and that is jihad. And the only way that a Muslim can ever be sure he's going to get to heaven or paradise and not go to hell is to die killing infidels. And so there's a tremendous incentive to do this sort of thing, which you and I is insane. To them, it's the most logical thing in the world, a totally different worldview, and the average American has no concept of that.
Well, you know, that's why we have no real defense against it. I mean, Israel, which has the tightest security of any country in the world, a country I've been to many, many times, I mean, they're constantly, almost on a weekly basis, having to deal with terrorist attacks. How much more a country like the USA that has open borders, that people, immigrants, illegals can come through like crazy. And I've been meeting with FEMA officials, I've met with some top immigration officials, I've met with a lot of key government officials, and it is just absolutely, totally amazing to find out how vulnerable we are in this country. And it's only really been acts of God that have kept us from, have saved us in many instances. And of course, I was talking with my good friend Chuck Missler, who's been talking with some top intelligence people, and he is very, very concerned about all these suitcase nukes in this country. And, a lot of my friends believe that we're going to be affected adversely in many ways in the very near future.
And I would
like to give you a little commercial here, if I might.
Go ahead.
I live in a ranch. I have my own springs. I have 240 acres, and I could exist there for many years without without much effect on the outside. So I'm actually in a position where I'm pretty safe. But the problem is right now that most people aren't in that kind of a position. Most people are in the position of where they don't know what to do. They don't know what to do when disaster attacks, and particularly in an urban area. And what I did some time ago is I did a lot of research, and I came up with something that is the most amazing thing. And I may sound like a salesman on this, because I am. I'm totally convinced that everybody should have one of these things. I have a water filter system that actually is a bottle with a water, it's a plastic, it looks like a sports bottle. You open it on both ends. On one end you have a filter, and you can pour dirty water in one end, and clean water will come out the other end.
Well, when I say, is that like the Big Berkey?
No, this is not a Big Berkey. This is a completely different, revolutionized kind of a thing. It's a Shishel bottle. It's a sports bottle. And when I first looked at this thing, I thought it was too good to be true. So I bought 1,000 of them. I became so convinced, and I started giving them away to my friends because I wanted them to be protected. I gave them to my missionary friends. I found out that the United States Red Cross has used it. The International Red Cross has been using it. The United States Marine Corps has used it. The French military has been using these things for some time. It is a water filter system that cuts out things down to a half a micron, which is real small. It cuts out all of the bacteria that can grow. It also filters out chlorine, and it's good if you flush it out for at least 5,000 gallons. Now, I have one in each one of my cars, and all of my friends that I hold dear have one, because if they come and they mess with our water systems, you want something that will give you emergency water. So I have this little, you know, it's supposed about a quart, this little quart container that I use. In fact, when I'm out hiking, I take it with me, and I just take water out of the stream and I filter it through that. And it, you know, it prevents beaver fever. It prevents, you know, it basically filters out all the bad stuff. When I was with Peter Hammond and went to Sudan, I gave Peter and his team all those. They use them in Sudan, and they found that it really cuts down on the dysentery. And the Red Cross, when they had the big epidemic in Mexico with all kinds of typhoid, all the Red Staff members of the Red Cross in Mexico, this was about 3 years ago, all of them used this thing, and none of them were infected with any disease. So this is something that we're beginning to sell ourselves, because if the enemy strikes, if our water systems are polluted, either through earthquakes, typhoons, floods, you know, you name it, I want to be able to at least have water. And you know, you can live without food for a long time, but you can't live more than probably 3 or 4 days max without water. And so this gives you the ability to take a mud puddle or some lake water that doesn't look too clean and filter it through this thing, and in almost all cases the water will come out and be totally drinkable. So anyway, that's one of the things that we're doing. We're also preparing with Ken. We've got a 5-part video series on how to be prepared for disaster, how to deal with terrorism, how to how to cope. We've got a book that we're throwing. In fact, there's a couple books that we're throwing into this thing, plus my movie on terrorism. So we're getting this all down. We should have this all completed within 2 to 3 weeks. Almost completed.
When you say Ken, you tell him that he's got to send me a copy of the book that I wrote the back cover on, saying what a great book it was, because of course I'd read the original one. It was a great book on the false prophet, and he changed the name, but he's never sent me a copy of the book. So you get after him.
Well, I will call. In fact, Ken called me this evening, and I'll call him back.
No, you don't call him back. Next time you see him, I just pull his leg a little bit. But he promised to send me the book because great book. Really helped to put the whole perspective of the revelation into great. He actually changed the book a little bit and asked me to write a commentary on it, and I did. He was supposed to send me one with my commentary on it, and I've never seen it. So, but I'm sure he's into a million different things.
Well, his book has been out about a month now,
right.
3 weeks, and I will be talking with Ken in the next day or two. He's actually been staying at my ranch while we've been working on this film, and we've interviewed people in the precious metals. We've interviewed people in ready reserve foods. We're really putting together something I think that will be life saving in terms of what's going to happen. This far exceeds the FEMA requirements or the Red Cross requirements, but we put together a survival kit. It isn't just a kit; it's more than a kit. It'll keep a family of five living for some time. And with all of the things that you need and that go into it, it's absolutely incredible. I'm working with some really creative guys.
Well, of course, when you get it all together, let me know, and we'll
bring
that which one.
And
right. And of course, I know David Sibley from Ready Reserve Foods. Been in touch with him. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to have to heed what Pat is saying. You're going to have to start thinking how you would look after your family if there was a real problem. And if you want to know more about ready reserve foods, you can like information, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And Pat perhaps will tell us a little bit more about that. A water bottle, you can maybe, Pat, you could talk to me off the air about that. Sounds sort of exciting. And I think that there are so many things that people can do to begin to have make preparations. The trouble is people are panicked when they don't know what to do. And believe me, if there was a major crisis in America, all the duct tape and plastic that you have stored away are not going to do you a bit of good. I mean, you're going to need to think about the basics, about the essentials. And, of course, the latest thing I got from out of the paper that the government was recommending was salt, towels, and running shoes. Running shoes? Where are you going to run to? I mean, I think somebody back there must be laughing and thinking, are the people really stupid enough to believe what we're putting out? Yes, there are lots of things you can do, but you have to realize that the world has changed forever. We are entering into a war, and the war and the battlefield is not going to be simply in Iraq or in Korea. It's going to be right here in the United States as well. And that's why, of course, President Bush said on the 15th of September, of 2001, you know, you'll be asked for your resolve for this battle will not be short. You'll be asked for your strength for this battle will not be easy. You'll be asked for your courage, for the battle will be long. And they're planning on a long, long, long battle. They just don't want you to realize how long it's going to be. As the Prime Minister of Canada said on the day of the attack, this battle will go on forever. And we have this on film, incidentally, Dave Wegener's films, where you'll actually see them saying these things and understanding the implications of what's being said. So, Pat, I think that's an exciting project, and you think you'll have this ready in a few weeks now? Because
we'll have it ready in a few weeks. And folks, if you want to, maybe we can talk off the air on this, but the water bottle that I'm talking about, and you can buy it through Dr. Stan, sells for $29.95. And folks, trust me on this. I mean, of all the things that I've ever been involved in, I would strongly recommend this. This is a water bottle that you can buy for $29.95 that filters your water. In fact, if you can take a test with your city water. I did it with my brother, who's a doctor. I took tap water and I filtered it through my bottle, my filter bottle, and then I took the regular water and I gave him a test taste. In fact, I've done this many, many times, and people instantly can tell the difference because all the impurities and all the bad things are taken out of just regular city water. And this is something that we want to use because floods, whatever, are going to affect our water system, and that's why I have it. So it's $29.95. And Dr. Stan, I can arrange to get these to you.
Okay, well, you can call me off the air and we can talk about that.
Yep.
Okay, well, if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or comment for Pat, our telephone number, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. But I think Pat's doing something that really needed to be done, and that is, of course, to put together some motion pictures to tell people what to do. Now, I think most people have this feeling, well, nothing seriously is going to happen. You know, the war is going to be over in just a week or two or at the most, and I hope and pray that's the case. But what happens if it's not? What happens when we go to war with North Korea? Because we are going to war with North Korea. How do I know? Why, William Crystal, who is one of the most powerful men in the world, today, he heads the Project for a New American Century, told Ted Koppel that the other night. And, of course, he led this group of people who laid out the plan for the Iraq War back in 1997. And as I said earlier, go to their website. You don't have to take my word for it. Go to their website, New American Century. That's www.newamericancentury.org, and read the letters that they were sending out in 97 and 98 and 2000 and the letter they sent to the president just 9 days after the September 11th attack. And the letters they're still sending out, and they've all said one thing: we're going to war with Iraq. And they were talking about that back in 1998. It's all part of a plan, and if you think anything has to do with, gee, we haven't decided whether we're going to war yet, you're incredibly, incredibly naive. The decision was made long ago, and plans were made within 30 hours of the September 11th, 2001 attack, according to the program that we saw the other night, according to Bob Woodward's book, Bush at War. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question on any of the things we're talking about, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here in the Central Coast of California, it's 464-8295. And, of course, it's sort of a free, open discussion here with our friend Pat Patriciana. But if you'd like to enter in, if you have something to suggest, why, give me a call here. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we'll be back here in just a moment for the second half of the last program this week. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening is Pat Patriciana, who produced certainly many of the great videos, but certainly the most famous one was the Clinton Chronicles. How many copies of that did you get out across the country, Pat?
Well, we got out about 650,000, and then we figured that there was another 300,000 or 400,000 that were pirated and given away. So we figured there's about 1 million of those things floating around somewhere, and it's amazing the number of people that have seen these. I'm just totally amazed when I go somewhere and somebody mentions that I was involved with that, and the number of people that have seen that thing in Hollywood, I mean, in every area of society. And it's, I think that your efforts and a lot of the stuff working with various friends really had a phenomenal impact in our country.
No, I think that really was responsible for the Republican sweep of Congress back in 1994. That, of course, put you on the Clinton's hate list. But anyway, that is a mark of distinction. Well, we've got Robert calling, and Robert's calling from Walnut Creek. Oh, hi, Walter. Robert, how are you doing?
Oh, great. My question is, do you think we can get Mel Gibson on your show?
No. Yeah. He had a chance to talk to Mel Gibson. We've never been able to get Mel Gibson on the program, although I would love to.
Well, that would be wonderful, but, guys like that have so many demands on their life. But
isn't he doing a picture over in Italy right now on the Passion of Christ, or on the crucifixion?
He is, and two of the people that work with me went over there to do the behind the scenes. As a matter of fact, the guy that did the Clinton Chronicles is doing the behind the scenes with Mel Gibson.
Really?
So it's pretty thrilling, but that would be great. I'd love that.
Anyway, do you have anything else, Robert?
No. That was the question of the evening.
Well, I wish we could get him on, but I've never even been able to get in touch with him. But I just have a feeling, a kindred spirit with him. I think he's a man who values a freedom and who values America. I think he's a man of strong moral values. Is he a Christian, Pat?
If Mel Gibson isn't a Christian, then 90% of the church isn't.
Well, my feeling is that he obviously has to be a Christian, just from the moral values he seems to hold. Okay, Robert, if we can possibly get it anyway, we certainly will. But right now, things aren't looking too good. Right now, he's got to finish this movie, and apparently this is not very popular in Hollywood because this is a very, very, apparently it's a very, very powerful picture about the Passion and Crucifixion of Christ. And, of course, as you know, much of Hollywood is very anti-Christian.
Oh, yes, but, this is where Gibson's different. He's willing to take a stand, and he knows he's going to take some hard knocks because, guess what, the film was shot visually. The language that they speak is Aramaic, which was the language, which is a form of Greek, and Latin, which was the language that they were speaking during that time period. And so they've had to, in a sense, resurrect Aramaic and put it into the verbal form. And but from the people that have seen the footage, they say that you really get it. You really understand it.
In other words, do they have the captions underneath there in English so I can tell what they're saying?
Not yet. But, of course, it's a story that's so familiar to all of us. We know from the expressions and what's going on and what's really saying. So it's really an international language in that it's extremely visual. And it, you know, it goes into the last 36 hours of Jesus Christ. And it's done in a way of Tim LaHaye, who is a very close friend of both of ours, I work with Tim, went through the screenplay and was able to make his comments to Mel and give him his suggestions. And so Mel's been open to the highest level of input, and so far everybody that's seen the stuff's been shot is just thrilled, absolutely thrilled with what's going on.
Well, you know, movies can have a profound impact on people and touch their very soul. It's sort of like a poem, much better than the written word. A poem can really touch and inspire people. And certainly a motion picture has that capacity. And, of course, motion pictures can be used for good or evil. Most are used for evil, but I'm sure that actually there are far more good movies coming out today than ever before.
I think so, too. Of course, there's a lot of bad movies, but I think, by and large, that in some ways there's more gospel being preached in the motion. When I say gospel, I don't mean just having some televangelist talk on the screen, but I mean a true Christian message. I think is being promoted in the most positive terms, not by preaching, but by the lives of some of the people that are in the movies. And there's a lot of good things really happening. A good friend of mine by the name of Ken Wales is doing a movie with Crusader, which is Phil Anschutz's company, who's one of the richest men in the world, and it deals with World War II, and it deals with the heroism of what happened when one of our ships that was transporting American human cargo to Europe during World War II was sunk. And it's a very, very powerful film, and it's it has a strong, subtle but powerful Christian message. And I think more and more things like that are coming out. So it's I'm excited with what's happening, and I'm excited that I'm able to have some sort of a role in all of this too.
Well, I'm glad you're down there and doing something, because I know that you'll have your a finger on the pulse of what's really happening in Hollywood. So, I think there's really an effort, of course, to give us this feeling of hopelessness. And sometimes I'll have to admit I may even get into that situation. And yet, of course, you think of the story of what happened in Nineveh when the people really did humble themselves and pray. And God was going to destroy Nineveh. He sent Jonah there to say, you got about 40 days, and if you don't shape up, this is the end. And the people did repent, and of course God then put off his judgment on that wicked, wicked city for two generations, I think at least 60 years before Nineveh eventually was destroyed. So there certainly is always the opportunity, there's that possibility, and that's what we have to work for and what we have to hope for, because of course there's no other alternative, there's no place to run. The battle for the survival of Christian civilization is right here in America.
It's here. And that's why we've got to stand firm. That's why we've got to be prepared. That's why we've got to be here for the long run. And it's going to be tough. America's not going to be the same ever again. We've lost our innocence. And I think that we've drawn the line in the sand. And I don't know what the future holds, except that I know where I'm going. I'm going to be with God for eternity, and that's the most important thing. But I think we as Americans need to carry the banner, to be proud of our American heritage, to trust in God with all our hearts, minds, souls, and spirits, and remember that as we work together, we can make a major, major difference.
Amen to that. And really, of course, there is much to be excited about, because at times of great turmoil, at times of great crisis, why people begin to evaluate what's really important in the world. Certainly, I saw this during my many years of medical practice, because most doctors were not Christians. Most of them didn't need God, and the only time that they would turn to God is when they had a personal crisis, maybe a divorce, or one of the doctors close to me lost his son, 14 years old, hiking accident, a skull fracture, he died. And then, at that point, why his whole world changed. And, of course, I believe, of course, we are going to face terrible, terrible things, times, but it'll be times like that when, of course, they're going to need people like you, Pat, and others out there who are willing to, of course, point people in the right direction. And, you know, I think many people have forgotten the history of America, but, you know, certainly the pilgrims got here and, what, 1619, 1620, people had come to Jamestown a decade before that. And, of course, they formed Harvard, I think, in about 1636, something there, 1640. But, you know, by the 1740, America was a totally corrupt nation. I mean, it really was. It had turned it away from God. And people had forgotten that it was at that point that Jonathan Edwards began speaking. He gave that same sermon over and over again. Sinner in the hands of an angry God. And it caused a great awakening, the first great awakening in America, a great revival. It swept this country, and it then prepared the way for the American Revolution. There never would have been an American Revolution if there hadn't been the first great awakening and revival. And, of course, that led, of course, to the country that has given us the freedom we've enjoyed for the last 200 years. Same thing happened, of course, in the mid-1800s, and America again turned away from God, and there was a second great awakening. Maybe there will be a third great awakening. At least we could hope and pray there will be.
Well, you know something? When things get difficult, people turn to God, and I think that we all know that 9/11 helped America to become more spiritual. And I just, because, you know, there's only so much that we can control in this world. And we have to look to the God that created us. Because, you know, He is the one that is alive and working in the affairs of men. And we must get in sync with Him. If we don't get in sync with Him, then, you know, we're going to miss the whole thing. And I think that as we pray and as we commit our lives closer to God, that we'll be able to handle any bad situation. And as you know, Dr. Stan, when I was in Sudan, I was with a small group of very dedicated believers. And the Sudanese Christians live under the most hostile circumstances. They have to deal with Muslim slave traders. They have to deal with raiders that come in and steal their wives and children and shoot them. Kill their pastors, burn their houses, steal their flocks of sheep or whatever they have, and what they can't take, they machine gun and kill and destroy. I saw in Sudan a level of spirituality that I'm sorry to say I don't see over here. I saw not a beat up, wimpy group of people. I saw people who were victorious because they were trusting in God, and God was doing great things in their lives. Against overwhelming odds, because of their trust in God, they were able to win wars. They were able to do things that were extraordinary. They were able to see miracles take place because they had nobody else to trust except God. And I do believe with all my heart, soul, and spirit that America needs to come get down on its knees and needs to look to God, because unless we look to the Lord, we're not going to have the power or the strength or the will, or the fortitude to make a difference in this world. That's what I'm concerned about.
Well, I agree with you totally, and I think that what is going on is a two-edged sword. One, of course, will cut to the very heart, will create fear, and the other, of course, will lead to victory. And, of course, the only thing that is going to get people through what lies ahead I think, is that personal faith in the Lord. Any of our listeners out there, we have a wonderful audio tape. It's called Brainwashing, and it's simply the story of a minister who was in China at the time of the communist takeover. And it's a two-part series. One's called The Devil's Heartbeat. The second one, Brainwashing, both stories told by Reverend Millen. But the first one tells about the communist takeover. The second tells about what happened to Reverend Millen when he was arrested by the Chinese communist and subjected to terrible mental torture and mistreatment. And he told about the other ministers there. There were a couple of Catholic priests that, you know, their faith was not firm enough to withstand the terrible, terrible conditions. A Jewish man who went stark raving mad because he had nothing to believe in. And, of course, it was his faith, Reverend Miller's faith, that saw him through. And I'll never forget the first time I ever heard the audio tape. And I was driving down to San Luis Obispo, and I was so overcome emotionally, I had to actually pull off the highway. The tears were too frequent. I couldn't really see the highway. So it was a little embarrassing, but I would suggest if any of your listeners out there would like to hear something that will strengthen your faith as it did mine, is that video, pardon me, it's the audio tape on brainwashing, and or the two set, The Devil's Heartbeat, and of course Brainwashing, the two of them together, the Reverend Millen set. But I think it's going to take something like that, Pat, to really awaken the American people to what's going on. And I think we are on the verge of dramatic and terrible, horrifying, frightening changes. And yet, of course, things that could lead ultimately to victory, perhaps not as a nation, but for the individual, because that's what it's really all about. We will not go before the gates of heaven as a nation, but as individuals, each one having to answer for our faith and for what we've done here.
Boy, well spoken. That sounds like an audio series I want to get my hands on. And I would like to say this, Dr. Stan, that you have stuff that you sell that is so amazing that nobody else can get it except through you. I'm just amazed at how you acquire these jewels. Do you have a catalog or something?
Oh, yeah, sure, if you'd like. I'll send you one. I'll let you talk to Jeannie afterwards, and we'll just send you our catalog. And
why don't you give me your 800 number so everybody can hear?
All right, it's 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. Or, of course, our website. My son has done a great job with our website, and that is, of course, RadioLiberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. And if you'd like to go up there, you'll find fascinating list of, there's so many items, I can't keep track of them anymore. But there's always new books coming along, and of course, we try to keep replenishing them with the latest things. Some of the old traditional books, though, they're never outdated, and whether it be Philip II Administrator, which I know you read many years ago.
Oh, what a wonderful novel, actually portraying the future.
Right. It's almost like these.
Colonel House, right?
Right. Colonel Edward Mandel House, one of the most evil men in the world, but certainly a person that I have read and studied his work, because he certainly understood what was happening. And of course, when I first got started studying Colonel House, I knew there was something strange about him. He had almost a mystical ability to control people. And I collected every book I could find on him, and actually was one book, and it was written by somebody who knew him, and he said, you know, when Colonel House would come into the room and talk to somebody, and after he'd left, why, an idea would come into their mind, and they would, you know, they would come up with this idea and suggest it, and everybody would agree it was a wonderful idea, it would be tried, and it would be so successful. And then as they were cogitating, and I that's a strange word, but it's a word that was used years ago, and it was written in the 1920s, as they cogitated about it, they'd suddenly realized that Colonel House had oozed that idea into their mind. And that was his phrase, oozed the idea into their minds. And it was many, many years pondering over this and the things I learned going through his papers before I realized he was deeply involved in the occult. He was part of this whole world Luciferian movement, and that's where he got his ability to control men's minds and to control Woodrow Wilson and to control Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And these men did not understand that they were dealing with a man who truly did have supernatural power. And that, of course, is about the frightening thing. And, of course, it is reassuring to realize, of course, that if people on that side have supernatural power, then those of us who have given our lives to the Lord can tap into that power as well. It's not our power at all. It is the power of the Lord, which we can claim and we can, of course, use for protection for ourselves and our families. And that really, as I see coming down the line, that is what we're going to have to rely on ever increasingly.
You know, Doctor, I'll tell you, I have been with witches and Satanists as I've done my filmings. I've been to many, many New Age festivals and, you know, all the things, all the areas of evil that I've been involved in. And I'll tell you one thing that I know for sure, and that is, greater is he than you, that's the Christian, than he that's in the world. And the power that we have as Christians far exceeds any of this this demonic power. But most Christians do not have that kind of power. They don't have the power of Christ because they're living a lie. They go to church and they say, they sing pretty little songs in the choir perhaps, but do they really live the gospel like they should? And when they do dump the bad and really seek the Lord with all their heart, mind, soul, and spirit, their lives are revolutionized, and then they have power. But I would say that about 95% of the church is impotent and is controlled, or could easily be controlled, by people like Colonel House.
Yeah,
they have no resistance. But yet a true believer, one that's empowered by the Holy Spirit, one that's committed to Christ, can have, really can have awesome power over the enemy. And this is why one Christian, one or two strong Christians together can have a huge impact on society. And you see, what the Lord is looking for is a few good men and women, not masses of lukewarm people, warm people. And that's why it's important, as we enter this pre-war stage and as we get involved in all the things that are going to be happening, and I think that we're going to have a decisive quick war just between you and I.
I hope and pray you're right.
I think we are, but guess what? That's just going to be Iraq. That doesn't include North Korea. That doesn't include all these terrorist organizations that are out there. They're going to try to do their thing. I think we're going to be in a very, very long war. But I do believe that if we as Christians, we'll unite together with the Lord with all our heart, mind, soul, and spirit, that we will be extremely victorious. Now, there is something that I want to give you. It was written well over 3,000 years ago by a man by the name of King Solomon. He wrote this. He said, "The fear of man brings a snare. We cannot live in fear. We cannot be fearful people. We cannot be fearful of men, because if God is for us, who can be against us?" So what I want to offer you folks who are listening tonight is the fact that we can be tough, tougher than the enemy, because of our relationship with God. And if you do not have a relationship with Jesus Christ, I would suggest that you call somebody at Dr. Stan's office, or that you find a decent church and ask somebody how you can actually know God in a personal way. It's not something we can discuss right now, but it's something that's so vital for your survival, not only physically, but also mentally and spiritually. Because I'm sounding like a preacher.
No, that's all right. I think that sometimes maybe we have to say this sort of thing, and at least we have a voice, and as long as you have a voice, this is the message we try to get out, but you put it very, very well. And I think that, it was... I think it was Thomas Paine, who I really didn't like especially, but he was a wonderful crafter of words. And, you know, he talked about the time of the founding of our society. These are the times that try men's souls. And I really believe that this is what we're going to be facing in the very, very near future. Well, you know, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. Do you have any parting thoughts for us this evening?
Well, I think my only parting thought is that with God, all things are possible. Put your faith in Him. Trust Him in everything that you do, and He'll bring it to pass. And if you don't have a Bible, get one and start reading it. Because read the book of Proverbs, the book of Psalms, read the book of John. These are great books.
Book of John especially, that's my favorite.
Mine too. Read it and get to know God in a personal way, and he'll give you the strength to endure whatever comes out. And I've seen people in the most primitive situations, circumstances, victors against all the circumstances that have come against them, and powerful in what they say and what they do. And God can give us that too.
Well, God bless you, and thanks so very much, Pat.
Thank you, and God bless you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. Give my best to Ken.
I will. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Let me just finish with this thought. Back of all that foes have plotted, back of all that saints have planned, back of the schemes by men or demons moves a higher hidden hand. Warp and woof are heavens making all the patterns good and wise, though on earth's side oft perplexing clear and right in heavenly eyes. All earth's agents act with freedom, choosing whether love or hate, faith in God or bold defiance, none are shackled slaves of fate. Yet the hand that guides is hidden, moving secret and unseen, firmly guiding life's great drama, every act and shifting scene. Every human wrath and knowing serves the all-controlling will. Man proposes, God disposes, all things his design fulfill. To that goal of all the ages, all of history's windings tend, and despite all foes or factions, God proves victor in the end. Mysteries which hurt and baffle, past our power to understand, in the end are turned to blessings by the sovereign's hidden hand. And I hope you'll remember those words. If you'd like a copy of it, give us a call. We'll be glad to send it to you. It was a poem written by a man named Arthur Pearson, but I think it personifies so much of what goes on today. And, of course, I always like to remember those wonderful words of James Russell Lowell. Though the cause of evil prospers, yet his truth alone is strong. Though her portion be the scaffold and upon the throne be wrong. But that scaffold sways the future. For in the dim unknown standeth God within the shadows, keeping watch above his own. And those words I hope you'll remember in the days and weeks and months that lie ahead, as I really sincerely believe we're moving into very difficult and trying times. But if you have your faith in the Lord, if you don't have it, give us a call. We'll be glad to talk to you. And if you do have it, of course, why get on your knees and ask God for guidance in the times that lie ahead. Well, this is the time we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is really dependent upon people out across America who believe in what we're doing, who understand that we're talking about the spiritual battle that began in the Garden of Eden and I believe is coming to its fruition right now, because there's so many things that the children of Israel have returned to the Holy Land, and not in faith. Most of them don't believe in the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. They just believe in being Jews. But they're there, and God has brought them there for a purpose, just as he's brought each one of us here for a purpose. And, we see this tremendous expansion of knowledge, the move towards the cashless society, the ability to be able to put a chip in people so they don't need to buy or sell unless they have it. All these things are not just happening by accident. The war is coming, this group of wicked and evil people planning wars. And where do they plan them? In the Middle East, close to Jerusalem, where the center of all things are taking place. So these are exciting and wonderful and terrifying times in which to live. But if you know the Lord, he'll see you through. And so our plea is, if you believe in what we're doing, if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for the boys who are going to be going into battle. Pray that Pat is right. This will be a very, very quick war with as little possible life as possible, loss of life as possible. Pray for the Arabs over there. Pray for the people in Palestine. Pray for the people in Israel. And then, of course, pray for our leaders. Pray for President Bush that he will be guided to do what is right, rather than, of course, the direction he's being pushed now by the forces that surround him and effectively control him, because he is controlled by the people around him. And many of them are part of this project for the new American century, which has its roots in the occult. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for revival in America, because if I've said so often, and I believe sincerely, unless America turns back to God, God will turn his back on America. And lastly, of course, we ask you to remember My Ministry, Radio Liberty, and we ask you to pray for our provision and for our protection. And so until Monday, when we'll be back with you, again, this is Dr. Stan saying good night, and may the Lord be with you.
Hello. Hi, Jeannie. I didn't get very many calls.